This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail. Woo! And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
W Hunting Supply is focused on providing their customers with excellent customer service and superior products for the everyday houndsman. From GPS tracking systems and dog training equipment to collars, leashes, and a variety of customizable hunting apparel, W Hunting Supply has it all. For more information, visit dusupply.com.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Find yourself in the pages of Full Cry as we dive into the archives of America's leading tree dog publication. Join us as we look back at decades of stories, articles, and more written by those bold enough to follow the echoes of a hound.
Let Me Take Him Home by Al Bowling from Salem, Indiana. From the February 1966 issue of Full Cry magazine. read by Bear Siragusa. The commissioner glared at me across the desk that had suddenly become 10 feet wide. I knew that I deserved anything he might say, but I knew too that if it was to do over again, my actions would be no different. The kid had gotten to me, and I wasn't sorry. Finally, he jerked a well-chewed but unlit cigar from his teeth and ground it viciously in the ashtray. Even then, I could feel some sympathy for him. The boys out front had tipped me off about the mayor's stormy visit. He was on a spot, and I had put him there. "Well, Lieutenant," he bellowed, "I want an explanation, and it had better be good." It all seemed a bit hazy now, the morning after. My reason was good enough to suit me, but I could hardly expect him to buy it, being city-bred and city-raised like he was. While he waited impatiently, I desperately attempted to rally my thoughts, groping for words with which to explain something that I couldn't possibly expect him to understand. There was one thing, though, that was clear in my mind. Right then, after the evening before, I knew that I didn't like the city. It may sound strange coming from one who had spent 30 years as a member of the Midwestern Police Force. I really didn't know before. But now there was no doubt. There was a feeling of shame, too, for having been a part of the cold, mad, and greedy rat race that has become such a part of everyday metropolitan existence. But as I stood there, lost in thought, the boy's strained white face flashed before me, and everything fell into place. Just him against the city. And for a while, it had been that way. Then his voice pierced the density of my thinking, penetrated the hot roaring in my head, dragged me up from the abyss of the big city indifferences, and I was once more a boy back on the farm, looking down in disbelief and horror as my old shepherd dog, the victim of a careless hunter's gun, bled his life out at my feet. All he had said was, "Please let me take him home." And I placed 30 years retirement on the line. I'd been at the desk talking to the sergeant when the call came in, just routine. We get many such calls every day, but for some reason or another, I heard myself saying, "I'll go with Harmon." While he tooled the squad car through the heavy homebound traffic, I thought again of that one tense statement from the dispatcher. "Vicious dog attacking people at 52nd and Oak. Investigate." It was, I thought, bitterly, probably the other way around. As we turned the corner at 51st, we saw that the entire lower half of the block was jammed tight. The siren got us nowhere, so dismounting, we proceeded on foot. Now the wild hootings and derisive laughter of the crowd pounded our ears, while several men could be seen darting back and forth. Then I saw and was suddenly sick with hatred for all that their heartless actions implied. An aged black and tan hound stood in the middle of the intersection, surrounded by a howling mob. Reeling, he pivoted slowly around in an effort to face as many of his tormentors as possible. Angrily, I tried forcing my way through the circle. Harmon growled disgustedly. "So this is the vicious dog? My God. What gets into people?" "Not surprised, are you?" I grunted, as I set my shoulder into the back of a middle-aged red-faced howler and shoved violently. He didn't answer directly. "Yellow-bellied cowards," he gritted as he grabbed a wild-eyed youth by the collar and slammed him to the side. "They'd do a human the same way if they'd only had the guts." Progress was painfully slow. Flashing my shield made no impression. It was just as if they'd gone blind to anything but the poor frightened animal in the center. Sickened by the look of wild hysteria in their eyes, I knew that the thinner veneer of civilization had been stripped completely away. They didn't even recognize us as police officers. The old dog was waging a losing battle to stay on his feet. With sides heaving and head down, his eyes burned from beneath drooping lids. Only grit was propping him up, nothing else. As he healed and almost went down, some of the braver ones edged a little closer. A deep growl rumbled in his throat, and they instantly pushed back in panic. A wild cry of mad dog went up from all sides. Oh, how I hated them all. Man's inhumanity towards God's lower creatures has intensified beyond all reason. Every effort to stiffen his legs brought a sudden shudder throughout the old dog's pain-racked body. Only his deep growl held them off. Harmon unsheathed his blackjack and looked at me beseechingly, but I shook my head. Not yet. Not yet. There might yet be another way. But time was running out. A large, bushy-haired, burly youth was advancing upon the now completely prostrate dog. I guessed him to be about 20, and his hand he held only a long club. My fingers closed over the butt of my gun. Maybe I could deter him by firing into the air, but I never jerked it free. There was no need. A hush had fallen over the crowd. The brave one, now in striking distance, had raised the club over his head. They held their breath, licking their slavering lips with anticipation. The would-be killer enjoyed this moment of heroics, paused in apparent relishment of his glorious stance. For an instant, the club hung, suspended in the air, then the muscles in his big shoulder tightened, and I knew that I would be too late. But even as I sickened, a piercing yell split the silence, and the bushy-haired one went flying through the air. A hurricane in the form of a lanky, red-haired boy had blown upon the circle, and they parted like uprooted palms. The crowd stood in open-mouthed amazement. Not a movement rippled through them as the boy stood beside the dog. He appeared to be about 18, but those blazing blue eyes in that taut white face placed upon him the mark of centuries. Right then, he was as old as all men, and of time itself. Scornfully, his eyes slowly swept the circle. Then, he deliberately spat at their feet. Still, he did nothing. Many, in which the mob hysteria was quickly dying, looked shamefacedly away, refusing to meet his eyes as they began to push back to broaden the circle around those lonely two in the middle. Then, with one last contemptuous look, he turned his attention to the figure at his feet. Kneeling, he placed his hands upon the scarred head and stroked it gently, speaking softly as he did so. The old fellow responded with a whine, and weakly began to lick his hand. Spellbound by the quick events, I had remained where I was at the interruption, and because of that, I must blame myself for what happened. I was too old a hand to take for granted that it was all over, but I did, and that was the cause of it. The big guy, whom he had knocked down, suddenly climbed to his feet. Quickly, he scooped up the club and moved to attack. Too late, I saw he was going to strike the kneeling youth from behind. Crazed with rage at being denied his moment of triumph, his only desire was revenge. I saw something else too then, and realized that my troubles were only beginning. I hadn't recognized the bushy-haired one before, but now there was no doubt. He was the obnoxious, overbearing, and ultra-spoiled son of the mayor. He'd given us trouble before, but this was swiftly turning into something of a lot different. I had only time to shout a warning, but that was enough. God, how it was enough. I never saw anyone move quicker. Like a flash, the redhead shot to his feet and whirled on the balls of his feet. Disdainful of the partially raised club, he calmly executed the old 1-2. The big, knobby knuckles of his left hand were planted in the midsection of the other, and as the air went out with a whoosh, his looping right fist landed flush on the side of the jaw. It was beautiful. Out of the corner of my eyes, I saw a big grin split Harmon's face from ear to ear. But the unmistakable crack of a broken bone, as the blow landed, at once enshrouded the encounter with deadly seriousness. But the fallen one was not alone. As he went down, half a dozen friends who'd been egging him on let out an angry howl. Their hero down on top of being robbed of the sadistic pleasure of seeing the old dog's brains bashed out was just too much. As a group, they surged forward, intent on finishing that which their fallen comrade had failed to do. And then a cyclone went to work in the middle of that circle. There was blood upon the street when it was finished. Again, I must blame myself. I never moved, and I'll never know why. Maybe I'm getting old and slow. Maybe I sensed that the redhead could handle it very well by himself. Or did I hesitate because I felt, as he did, about the mob? Did I let him go ahead because I enjoyed seeing him do that, which I could not? I'll never know. Swiftly, he scooped up the club dropped by the big youth as the crowd closed in. Briefly, then, he was out of my sight, and then the hairs on the back of my neck pricked at the wildness of the war whoop that rang out from the center of the circle, and they went reeling backwards like tenpins. My skin crawled at the sound of wood against flesh as the club landed with deadly impact. The boy was spinning in a circle with the club held at full length, and those nearest the center went down with the rapidity of grain before a scythe. It was over as quickly as it had begun. What a mess. Three lay moaning upon the ground, while three more stood with pain-racked faces, clutching obviously broken arms. Redhead stood there, calmly surveying the carnage as the light of battle slowly died in his eyes. Then the club dropped from the hand, suddenly gone limp, and a shudder swept him. For an instant, he looked as if he was going to be sick, and then his eyes lifted to mine. I saw the dismay mirrored there in their blue depths, and the sorrow and regret. As Harmon and I pushed through the slack-jawed crowd, relief flooded the boy's face as he recognized us for what we were. The composure he reflected told that he knew he had done only what he had to do, and that he was ready to take his punishment. I was not going to enjoy that which I must do. The arrival of the ambulance, summoned by Harmon, for a moment took my mind off the boy. After a brief examination by the doctor, it appeared that things might not be as bad as I feared. In his opinion, the ones with the skinned heads, barring possible concussions, would be none the worse for the wear after a few stitches here and there. It was a distinct relief to see them loaded and on their way to the hospital. But the big one, the mayor's son, was a different story. He was still out cold, and his jaw was definitely broken. The mayor was going to cry for blood, and I knew just whose it would be. Redhead stood waiting with a calmness that was, for the moment, infuriating. While the crowd stared in awe, I pushed angrily through to him. Even then, I knew the anger I felt wasn't at the boy, but at just everything about the city that made people like they were. But for the instant, he was the focal point for all my misery, something solid before me, an object to grasp, to feel, and upon which to vent my wrath. I don't remember a word I said, but I was only aware that my voice trembled with fury and that the face of the boy grew whiter with every word. But even under my tirade, he was unshaken. For with one piercing flash of those intense blue eyes, he suddenly ignored me completely. My words hung in the air as he knelt once more to the side of the dog. Tenderly, he took the old head in his hands as he spoke softly, and the raging but aged old lion became a lamb under his touch. No other sound broke the stillness as he crooned to the dog. His words were too soft for the rest of us to hear. But that was as it should be, for it was only between them. Slowly, he raised his face to mine, and a knot formed in my stomach, only to travel rapidly to my throat. For those terribly angry eyes of only a moment before now glistened with unshed tears. Wretchedly, I waited for him to speak. Finally, in a voice strained with emotion, he began, "It's all right, officer. I know I'm under arrest and I deserve it, but I couldn't just stand by and let them mistreat this old fellow." Harmon asked softly, "Is this your dog, son?" For a moment, the boy didn't answer as he looked down into the luminous eyes of the old hound. Whimpers of delight arose in the old fellow's throat at the touch of his hand. Then he raised his head again and said, "No, sir. I never saw him before in my life. He was just a hound that needed help. Compassion, such as this, was indeed strange to a lifelong city resident such as Harmon. He found it all a bit incredulous. Silently, he shook his head as he stared at the boy. I forced myself to say, "Son, you sure did get yourself into a mess." He nodded. "Yes, sir, I know. But I had to do it." My attention was drawn to the old hound, who had gotten shakily to his feet. Pity for him swept me, accompanied by instant fury at whatever lack of compassion within somebody had brought him to this spot. Still governed, though, by years of impersonal training as a cop, I said, "I'll have to book you, son. I must warn you that there's no telling what the charges may be after the report from the hospital." He only nodded, but at my next words, his eyes widened in dismay. "We'll have to send him to the pound to be put away," I said. "Oh, no, sir, you can't do that," he said, his voice rising. Again, I was suddenly angry. I struck out at him with my frustration. "Obviously, there's nothing else to do," I said acidly. "Come along now, and don't give us any more trouble." Harmon was turning to walk back to the car to call the animal shelter truck when all at once the sickness in his eyes of the boy, for some reason or other, caused me to ask him to wait. "Do you have a better idea?" I said to the youth. The relief that flooded his face was easy to see. "Let me take him home." "But," I sputtered, you said you didn't know him." He smiled with a maturity beyond his years. "I beg your pardon, sir, that's not what I said exactly. I said I had never seen him before." Now he pressed the old dog down on me, so I said nothing as he continued. "But I know him as I know all hounds. I know he deserves some decent treatment, for God knows he's had a little enough of it recently." This kid was upsetting what should have been merely routine business. Thoughts of my pension going down the drain for the moment drove away all other feelings. "Sorry, kid," I said harshly. "It can't be done. Don't argue anymore now. Let's go." But he wasn't giving up so easily. "Please, sir. He only has about a year left to live, maybe two at best. He deserves a chance to die back in the hills where he came from. I don't know how he got here, but I know how he can get back." I could feel my pension slipping. Desperately, I grasped for it. Scathingly, I barked, "So now you say that he came from the hills." Again, the brief smile flickered across his face. "Not only that," he replied gently, "but I know he'd been a good coon dog." He hadn't struck me as a liar, but he'd gone too far. "Now see here," I exploded. He didn't answer, only flipped back one of the old dog's big long ears. His finger traced a pattern of small, narrow scars on the underneath side. "Those scars were made by the claws of many coon," he said matter-of-factly. Then he pointed to the similar ones across the muzzle. He added, "Those two." But he hadn't made good on the rest of his statement. "That doesn't prove to me he's from the hills." Now he pressed the old down dog on his side. "No, sir, they don't. But these may very well do so." He indicated by his fingers where three or four much larger and longer scars on the upper part of his belly and a couple more across his chest. Now, I could be wrong about these, but I don't think so. I think these were made by cats, and a few cats we have in this state are found mostly in the hills. There aren't enough cats for a dog to get much experience in fighting them, so that's why he got caught up. Harmon was looking at me in bewilderment. I knew what he was thinking. I'd lost control. Instead of making an arrest, I was only putting off something unpleasant by listening to the spiel of a wise kid who was probably pulling my leg. It had gone far enough. "That may be true," I said gruffly, "and maybe you can take him home after it is all over, but not now." "Later will be too late," he rasped angrily. Then more softly, "Please, sir, let me take him home now. down to my farm, 100 miles south of here, where he can run free for the time he has left. Then when his time comes, there's a little hill out back of the barn. To my horror, I heard myself saying, "Can I trust you to come back by tomorrow morning to answer the charges?" Steadfastly, his eyes bored into mine. "Yes, sir. I'll leave at once and be back whenever you say." While depressing thoughts of what it would be like to start building a new retirement plan at my age nagged at me, I nodded at the kid in agreement. It took a few minutes more to get the information I needed. His name was Jody Hawkins. He was a freshman at the university and was from Saldon County, seat of Woboco County. Had only his mother alive and owned a small farm left to him by an old man who had passed on. Then, telling him to report to the address I gave him at 9 the next day, we watched him load the old dog into an ancient Chevrolet and head south. I was suddenly very tired as I flopped into the seat beside Harmon. I'd finally done it, something for which I would have chewed him out plenty. Harmon's interruption of my dark mood was a pleasant break. A sardonic grin wreathed his face as he said, "Congratulations, Lieutenant." "For what?" I grunted. "Maybe kicking 30 years of retirement down the drain?" He shook his head. "No, sir. I mean for being a human being and for doing exactly what I would have done if I had had the power." All at once, I felt good. Harmon was a veteran cop, level-headed and well thought of on the force. Subordinate or not, right then, his approval meant a lot to me. But he had better news. "Don't worry about losing that retirement," he said. "I'll back you up 100%. And while you were talking to the boy, I got the names and addresses of 5 people who will testify as to just how it happened." Right then, I knew that the boy was going to be a sergeant before long. I knew something else, too. The redhead would be back, just like he said, and that he and I were in for a long talk all about those hills of his and the little piece of ground off that farm of his where I could build my house. Maybe soon enough to have an old hound for company. For a year or two. Suddenly, the harsh jangling of the phone of the commissioner's desk snapped me back to the present and the hard facts of reality that I still had a lot of proving and convincing to do. He listened briefly and hung up. Slowly, the scowl on his face gave way to a grin, then proceeded to a deep chuckle by only a second or two. "Relax, Cal. I just couldn't resist that one last chance to needle you. It's all here in Harmon's report, and the boy is outside, and your 5 witnesses." When I would have spoken, he added, "That must be quite a boy. I want to meet him and to shake his hand. I've had a belly full of people standing around refusing to lend assistance when it's needed. Maybe there's a chance for the human race after all." It's funny how everything can fall into place all at once, and the answers stand out so clear. The boy wouldn't be held. My judgment of character had been upheld, and it didn't matter where you were raised. If you were the right kind of person, you could feel compassion for weaker things. Anyway.
Like what you heard? Leave us a review and make sure to tag at Full Crime Mag when sharing your own adventures. You can check out more vintage content and get your subscription to the all-new Full Crime Magazine at www.fullcrimemag.com. From the pages of Full Cry is a Full Cry production. We want to thank our sponsors and encourage everyone to support those who support our lifestyle. This episode would not be possible without the support of Next Level Super Premium Dog Food and W Hunting Supply. Until next time, keep those dogs in the woods and find yourself in the pages of Full Cry.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.